Okay, so Genesis chapter 39, and just to get everybody kind of up to speed on where we're at here, we started out a few weeks ago with the changeover from Jacob into Joseph, and we started discussing Joseph, and we saw him, the favorite son of his father, hated and despised by his brothers, and he was sold off into Egypt into slavery. Last week, we took a little bit of a side road, a little bit of a detour, and looked at one of Joseph's brothers, Judah, in chapter number 38. And so whenever we looked at Judah, we saw his shame. Honestly, Judah is a picture of a man who is ruled by the flesh. He is, from the beginning to end, he did whatever was right in his own eyes. He did what the world often tells us today, he followed his heart. And we saw the results of all of that. And so he repeatedly failed and he faced the consequences of his failures. And we did say that there was one redeeming thing to it all, not to him, but to his situation, is that God was still able and willing to use someone as flawed and as messed up as what Judah was. So that gives us a little bit of hope. But honestly, with Judah himself, I could find no redeeming qualities. He's not someone that we would like to be friends with. He's not someone that we would like to be like. I mean, if you look at his life was a mess. And we see that also a lot of his brothers, many of Jacob's children, were far from admirable, just like Judah. And I won't go through the whole list of those, but many of them we've met so far are not good people. But yet they were the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, that's not something to hold against Israel itself, but it was something to humble Israel, saying that you're not exactly from the best stock there is. You know, you're not exactly the greatest people that there is there, because they took a lot of pride in where they came from. But anyway, before we looked through Judah's mess here, like I said, we looked at Joseph, and that's where we're going to pick up at today, is where he was sold to the Ishmaelites, taken down to Egypt to become a slave. And so as we consider Joseph, he's really the opposite of Judah. He's the opposite of Judah. As Judah was a man that followed his heart, that he did what was right in his own eyes, Joseph was a man of principle. No matter what situation Joseph got into, he did what was right. He continued to be faithful to God. He continued to serve God, no matter what the situation seemed to be. Judah receives our scorn, but Joseph receives our sympathy as we look at their stories. And so we can see that Judah is an example of what not to do. And I've often said that we can learn a lot from a good, bad example. I know my children have heard me say that many times. You all probably heard me say it as well. And Judah is a good, bad example. But Joseph, on the other hand, he is the ideal example of godly living. If you want someone to kind of set up on a pedestal a little bit, Joseph is one of the only ones in Scripture that you can't find anything negative written about him. You don't find any bad thing written about Joseph. And so anyway, he is a good example, something to aim for, something to shoot for there. And so as we pick up in Genesis 39, we're going to start off, and I'm just going to read the first six verses of the chapter to get going. It says, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." And so a lot happened in those six verses. He went from being a slave to being master of the entire house there, but yet he was still a slave. Now, to get us on track here a little bit with where we're at, we found out just a couple chapters previous, it mentioned Joseph being about 17 years old. Okay. A little bit of time has went by. We can figure Joseph to be about 18, 17, 18, somewhere around there, when he gets sold down into Egypt. That's going to be important here in a minute, because we need to figure out where he's at whenever all this is going on. All right? And so as Joseph is sold off into Egypt, he probably had much different plans for his life. You imagine, just not too long ago, he was dreaming dreams in his father's house, telling his father and his brethren about these dreams that he had, making his brothers mad, right? Dreams of him and his brothers bowing down to him, either as the sun, moon, and stars, or as the sheaves in the field bowing down to him. This is what he thought was going to happen. This is the plans that he had. And so slavery in Egypt was a big difference from the visions that he had, from the dreams that he had. Whenever he was there in his father's house, having the favor of his father, he probably had a rather good life, even if he was scorned by his brothers. His dreams and his position as being his father's favorite would have gave him a bright and exciting position for the future. So just kind of put yourself in Joseph's shoes here for a minute. He would take over Jacob's empire. He would be inheriting all the herds and the servants that his father had. And so he had nothing but blue skies and green pastures ahead of him in his mind. And so all that changed in one day. He was idealistic. He was making his plans. And then his brothers found him then one day, wandering there in Dothan in the fields. And so whenever his brothers found him, he found himself in a pit. Then not long after that, he was pulled out and he found himself tied to the back of a caravan going down to Egypt to be sold as a slave. Now, that was nowhere in Joseph's plans. That was nowhere on the horizon, anywhere that he could imagine that was what was going to happen with his life. And so he probably figured he'd been a good son. He'd been faithful to God. He had been a very moral and a very good man throughout his life, as short as it may have been. He could have compared himself to his brothers, right? His brothers were going out and getting into all kinds of wickedness, that his brothers were immoral. But he never was. So surely he deserved to have a good life, right? He deserved for good things to happen to him. But now he was in Egypt, getting ready to be sold as a slave. That was nowhere on the horizon for him. That wasn't the way his plans were. And so he may have been asking himself, how could this happen to him? How could the dreams that God had given him come to pass with him being a slave in Egypt? None of this seems to go together. It doesn't seem to fit, does it? We're starting to see that in our lives, often we are very limited on our vision. Of course, all of us know how the story ends up, right? But keep in mind, all the time as we're reading through this, Joseph didn't know what the next step was. Whenever he was wandering out to go check on his brothers, he had no clue by that evening he was going to be headed towards slavery in Egypt. Didn't have any idea of that. In his mind, he was going to go check on his brothers. They would probably give him a hard time, but he would go back and give the report to his father, and things would continue onward. He would deal with them later whenever he received power and authority over them from his father, right? And so things would have been a blur. The next thing he knew, he was owned by one of Pharaoh's officers, Potiphar. So this would have been a military leader. He would have been a powerful man in Egypt. And how quickly everything just fell apart in his life. From being the favorite son to being a slave now. And with all that said, it would have been very easy for him to sink into a depression. It would have been easy for him to go into a life of despair and mediocrity, just being another slave in Potiphar's house, because there's probably many of them. He could have been bitter toward God and toward his brothers and his situation, and no one would have blamed him had he have gone that way. Oftentimes we do the same thing whenever our lot in life doesn't suit us. It doesn't fit into our plans or the direction that we thought it was going to go into. And we start getting bitter. There's been many people who have shook their fist at God and said, how could God do this to me? How could God allow this to happen whenever tough things came up in their life? Yeah. Honestly, Joseph was in a tough situation. Not trying to be mean to Joseph or anything. He was probably a little bit soft at this time. Being the youngest and being the favored son and being the one who had the coat of many collars, he probably got all the easy jobs. He probably got the best position, the softest bed, in the nicest room, and all the things that he wanted. Birthdays came around, his was probably extra special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now He's a common slave in Potiphar's house. Big difference, right? And so it would have been very easy for him to get better. It would have been very different for him, or very easy for him to be just another slave. But he wasn't just another slave. He was a child of God, and he decided to act accordingly. Mm-hmm. And that makes a big difference in the story. And so even though he may not have liked the situation, he determined that whatsoever his hand found to do, he did it heartily as unto the Lord. Like we read in Colossians 3:23. That's what Paul was admonishing the people in Colossae to do. Whatever you're doing, do it like you're doing it for God. Yeah. And that's what Joseph did, even as a slave. And so Potiphar took notice, and he promoted Joseph. Now look at verse number 3. It says, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand." Joseph was living in such a way that Joseph wasn't getting the glory out of it, but God was. Even in a pagan land, even down in Egypt with Potiphar, Potiphar was giving credit to Joseph's God, saying there's something about this Joseph and something about this Joseph's God that is prospering what Joseph does. By the way, we can see a little bit of a parallel here with Jacob and Laban. Remember whenever Jacob worked for Laban and whatever Jacob did in Laban's house, it prospered. And Laban said, "I know that I have been prospered for your sake because you're here with me." Mm-hmm. Potiphar came to the same conclusion. He said, "My household is blessed because you're here. Whatever you do it well. And it seems like it comes up roses, right?"
Right.
Now, if we're not careful, we look at this both with Jacob and with Joseph and think, okay, if we're just a good person, we live a good moral life, we are faithful to God, keep a good attitude, everything comes up really nice. Mm-hmm. There are preachers out there that preach a health, wealth, and prosperity gospel that if you're a good person, then everything is going to go your way. And it seems like that's happening with Joseph here if we're not careful, but you realize he's a slave. All things aren't going his way.
Yeah.
God may be prospering, but he's prospering him in spite of the circumstances.
Yes.
Even though things aren't going well for him, God's still working things together for good. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the story of Joseph here is the ultimate picture of Romans 8:28. We often look at Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Joseph illustrates it perfectly. And I've said oftentimes that in Romans 8:28, it doesn't say that all things are going to be good. But it says that all things will work together for good. And we see that in Joseph's life. And so as we look at this here in Joseph's life, it would have been so easy for him to just give up hope, quit trying, just go into, like I said, a life of mediocrity, just being another slave. But although he was a slave, because of his faithfulness to God and because of his integrity, there's a big theme to this, he became the most trusted servant and manager of all of Potiphar's affairs. That goes against all logic that Potiphar would have a slave to be the manager of his household. You wouldn't typically do that. Slaves are the ones that are doing all the manual labor. They're doing all the jobs that no one else wants to do. You're going to get a well-educated and very a man of very high morals and integrity to run your affairs, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get a common servant to be your accountant, so to speak. But this is what happened is Joseph showed integrity in everything that he did. He showed honesty in everything he did. And he was constantly doing his best. He was constantly above reproach. He was constantly honest in all that he did. And so with that, Potiphar caused him to raise up to the top of his affairs here. And it says that Potiphar didn't even know anything that happened in his house, didn't know about any of his possessions. He didn't know how his bank accounts were doing, how his stocks were going, how his retirement plan was working out. I'm just throwing those in there. I know they didn't have those back then. He didn't know how all those things were going. The only thing that he knew about was the food that was set before him. He knew that the food was still on the table. Other than that, it's all Joseph's problem. Could you imagine trusting someone that much? You don't even look at the bank ledger. Don't see your account balance. You never make sure that the bills are going out because Joseph's in charge and he knows that all those things will be taken care of. Says a lot about Joseph, doesn't it? There was no auditors coming in. There was no other layers of security going about. Joseph was all there was because of his honesty and his integrity. And so with all this, it seems like things are looking up once again. Although Joseph was a slave, he wasn't living like a slave. He would have been dressed in the best. He would have been back to living in the master's house, probably in one of the best rooms. He would have had everything that he needed, everything that his master owned was at his disposal. And so he was in a good place again. It'd have been great to stay there, wouldn't it? But this isn't as far as God wants him to go. I just want to take a moment and point out something here that we can start picking up on as we go through the life of Joseph. It's easy for us to look at Joseph's story and see the happy ending. And as I pointed out just a minute ago, anytime during this story, Joseph didn't know how things were going to go. Joseph didn't know what the end of this was going to be. He didn't know that one day he was going to be basically the prime minister of Egypt, the grand vizier to the Pharaoh in Egypt. He didn't know that he was going to be that guy. As far as he knew, whenever he was sold into slavery, he was forever going to be a slave. Mm-hmm. That he is going to have the lowest of positions in society the rest of his life. As he climbed up and became the right-hand man to Potiphar, he thought, okay, this is the life I'm going to live the rest of my life. I'm going to be in this position taking care of Potiphar's assets in his household. Mm-hmm. Each step along the way, he thought that's where he was going to be at.
Right.
And we know that's not the case. We know that God had other plans about this. And so, if we see that he eventually does become prime minister there in Egypt, and he saves the lives of millions of people, including his own family, we know that's where he ends up at, and everybody says, hey, things turned out good for Joseph. Mm-hmm. But the question I want us to think about as we go through this is, each step of the way, if he would have stayed there, would that have ended up happening? Would he have ever ended up being prime minister of Egypt if he was never sold into slavery? Would he have ever ended up being prime minister of Egypt if he stayed in Potiphar's house? It may have been a good place for him. He may have enjoyed being in his father's house and all that, but he never would have been the prime minister of Egypt and saved everyone had he stayed in his father's house. Never would have been prime minister of Egypt and saved everyone had he stayed in Potiphar's house. In each of these steps, God brings adversity in his life to redirect him and to shape him. Mm-hmm. How often do we look at adversity in our lives as being a good thing?
No.
We don't like adversity. We don't like hard times. We don't like troubles. But it's very possible that each time that these things come into our lives, they are to shape us, they are to guide us, they are to direct us. Because God is able to work all things, even the bad things. Even though we can't see the next step, we can't see how this is possibly going to get us any closer to our will and our wishes and our desires, God has a plan. And so as Joseph is sitting in Potiphar's house, he's still remembering the dreams that God had given him years ago and saying, I have no idea how I'm going to be any kind of a leader, any kind of a ruler, how my brothers are ever going to come and bow down to me with me being a slave in Potiphar's house. All kinds of questions in his mind, right? At every step of the way, there's no way that God can make this happen from where I'm at now. But we see the end of it, and it does happen, doesn't it? And so we desire for good and ease to happen in our lives, but if we pay attention to Joseph's life, we find that the adversity that we so dread and we don't want in our lives is often the key aspect, the critical, to get us where God wants us. And so the things in Joseph's life, they were going well in Potiphar's house. As I said already, he would have been content to stay there. He would have been living an honorable and a godly life. But God wasn't satisfied to let him stay in Potiphar's house. I think also Satan was trying to find a way to destroy Joseph. We can find that there's a lot of similarities between Joseph and Job. We see Job's testing and trying. Honestly, Joseph goes through about as much as what Job did. I mean, he didn't lose any children, but he lost everything else.
Right.
And also, I believe Joseph went through it a lot longer than what Job did. Sometimes the length of the test plays a big role in the severity of it. But anyway, as Satan was seeking to destroy him, and God allowed Satan to come in with lies and with different temptations. And so Satan tried his worst, waging war against Joseph's character and against his integrity. And we read about that as we continue here in verse number 7. It says, "And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all things that he hath into my hand." By the way, that word wotteth, it means that he doesn't know anything that's in his house except for, as I said earlier, the food and things that he had. Wotteth just means to know. "Behold, my master knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath into my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee." He says, you're the only thing off limits. We can also see a parallel here to Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Only one thing off limits. But he passes the test, unlike Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So he says, neither hath he kept anything back from me but thee. Because thou art his wife, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? By the way, that is a powerful statement there, that he views this not as sinning against himself, not as sinning against Potiphar, not even as sinning against Potiphar's wife. He says, if I do this thing that you're trying to get me to do, it is a sin against God. And oftentimes we can shrink down our sins in severity, and we lose track of the idea that whenever we sin, ultimately it is against God. We look at it as more of an intimate thing. Oh, well, I just lied to them. It's only a sin. No, it's a sin against God.
Yeah.
But anyway, going onward here. Verse 10, it says, "And it came to pass as she spake with Joseph day by day." This is persistent. This is ongoing. It's not a one-time event. "And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her to lie with her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there with him. And she caught him by the garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled away and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, See, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me." By the way, there's twice she blamed this on her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 18, "And it came to pass as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison." Poor Joseph. He did the right thing and was punished for it. Let no good deed go unpunished, right?
Right.
And so we're seeing Joseph, poor Joseph got sold into slavery. Well, slavery didn't work so bad for him because he did the right thing, God blessed him, and he became master over all of Potiphar's house.
Yeah.
Good on Joseph. Things are going great for Joseph. But it says at the end of verse number 6, "And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored." You know what that means? He was good-looking. Joseph was a good-looking guy. And Potiphar had a wife, Miss Potiphar. And apparently, with the position that he was in, he was probably away from home quite a bit. And with the position that he was in, most likely Potiphar's wife would have been a young and nice-looking lady.
Yeah.
Giving a little bit of a time frame here, for Joseph to be sold into slavery at 18 years of age, and for him to work up himself to being master over Potiphar's house, it took a few years. It took a few years for this to happen. So by now, he's in his mid-20s. He's a hard-working guy. He's been very successful. He is over all of Potiphar's house. And had he stayed a normal slave, had he never excelled above the rest of them, you know what? Mrs. Potiphar never would have paid any attention to him. But now that he was at the top, now that he was the one that was running the household and her husband was gone for long lengths of time, Miss Potiphar started paying attention to Joseph. She started lusting after him and wanting Joseph, and more than likely, being Miss Potiphar, she wasn't used to being told no. And many men in Joseph's place probably would have been more than happy to say yes. But Joseph wasn't like the other guys. Joseph hadn't handled situations the way other men had. And so Joseph all along was above reproach. He all along kept his integrity. And so all of these promotions that he had didn't come without peril. Because as Miss Potiphar laid eyes on him and decided that she wanted him, she started making advances at him. She started making passes at him, trying her best to get him to give in. I can imagine her saying, "My husband's going to be away for months longer. You have everything else in the house. He's trusted you with everything. You've taken care of everything else that belongs to him. Come and take care of me too." And so with that, he may have even felt a little bit entitled and said, "Sure, why not?" But he knew it was wrong, and he refused to do it. And so the trap was baited and set for him, but he didn't fall for it. And as I said, she was persistent day by day. She was trying to wear him down. By the way, doesn't matter how well things are going for us in our life, doesn't matter how good it seems that things are going, ease and success, prosperity, does not mean that we're going to be able to escape every temptation and trial. It doesn't mean that we are outside of Satan's sights that he has for us. And so with all of this, by the way, I've read recently, two of the most dangerous times for us is when we have nothing and when we have everything. And Joseph was an example of both of these. He had both had nothing in prison and he had had everything. And he had passed the test in both of these. And so if we're not careful as Christians, whenever everything seems to be going smoothly, we're often unsuspecting of the trials that will come or the temptations that we'll face.
Yeah.
By the way, another lesson that we can learn from this is neither does success or failure indicate our relationship with God. As I said earlier, a lot of the prosperity preachers say that if you're serving God, everything's going to go smoothly. Joseph says no. Hardship can still come. The very same guys also say that if you're going through hardship, it means that you are in sin or God's against you. Once again, Joseph says no. He proves it wrong on both accounts. And so anyway, back to what we were saying here. Day by day, Potiphar's wife was coming, trying to get Joseph to come and lie with her. And he was passing the test all along. But as the saying goes, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And she didn't take too well to him refusing her advances. And so finally one day, he comes in. He'd probably been careful all along not to be there alone with her. Probably other servants and other people around the household had noticed these things going on. They probably could have even vouched for him, but no one stood up. But anyway, one day he let his guard down. It says that he went in the house to do his business. Fill in the blanks. You understand what he was doing. He went to the bathroom. Right? I believe that's what he done. It may not have been. But anyway, he was in the house alone in a compromised position. And it said that she lay hold of his clothes and said, come lie with me. And he ran, fled, got him out, and left his coat behind, his clothes behind him. So whatever the business was that he was doing, when he ran away, she was left holding his garments. Notice this is twice in Joseph's life. Whether there's any significance to this or not, I'm not sure. But this is twice in his life that someone is left holding his coat, using it against him. Mm-hmm. The first time his brothers took his coat and showed it to his father.
Right.
And his father decided that animals had eaten him.
Mm-hmm.
This time Potiphar's wife is left holding his clothes. And Potiphar is left to think that Joseph had come and made advances on his wife.
Right.
Two times that a coat's made to incriminate him.
Yeah.
I think if I was Joseph, I'd quit wearing coats.
Yeah.
Just an idea there.
He
may have. And so anyway, leaves her there holding the coat. And so his faithfulness and his honesty was not enough to dissuade Potiphar, who, as soon as he seen the coat and he heard his wife's story, even though I'm sure that this wasn't the first time that she has done this, she probably had a record of not being trustworthy, but yet he trusted his wife over Joseph. Because of course you'd want to trust your wife over the slave, right? And so he throws Joseph into prison. By the way, we look at this and we think, oh, poor Joseph, he's in prison. But you realize Potiphar could have easily had him killed?
Yeah.
So we see God intervening. We see God's mercy in that as well. But yet, Joseph is now slandered. He's imprisoned. Things have not went well for Joseph. And so we feel sorry for him again, right? But as we look here, while he's sitting here in prison, this wouldn't have been a prison like we see today. All right. This wouldn't have been a nice modern prison with beds and television and heating and nice dry places to stay. I mean, prisons still aren't nice, but this would have been much more like a dungeon at that time. It would not have been a pleasant place to live. So there's Joseph lying in the dark, damp dungeon, trying to bring together his thoughts and think about everything that's happened. Remembering back maybe by now 8-10 years prior, we'll say about 7 or 8 years, okay, just for the sake of time. Whenever he was the favored son in his father's house, when everything was going good, when he had a bright future, when he was expecting to inherit all of the things that his father had, whenever he was expecting to become a leader of his household, everything was looking bright for him back then, and now he's sitting at a dungeon, and he had done nothing wrong. You ever been falsely accused? You ever been in unfair conditions? You ever been somewhere where you just said, I've not done anything wrong. Why has this happened to me? Joseph was the epitome of that. I mean, he had honestly done nothing wrong. Everywhere he'd went, he kept the right attitude. He had lived in a godly manner. He did what was right and just. Constantly. And so many of us would have sat there in that prison saying, what good did it do me? What good did it do me to be good? What good did it do me to do the right thing? I would have been better off to just gave in. I would have been better off to done what Potiphar's wife wanted me to do. I would have been better off never to have climbed up the ranks in Potiphar's house. I would have been better off just to be another slave. At least I wouldn't be in this dungeon now. You see how the mind kind of works in these situations?
Yeah.
Or at least this is the way mine does. What good did it do me? Where are you at, God? Where did you go? Do you even care? Life's not fair. All of these different things that go on in our mind. He'd refused sin. He lived honestly. He worked hard. Passed over all kinds of temptations and pleasures. But it seemed like God just didn't care about him in this situation. And so as I said, he probably would have felt like he'd been better off to just give in and live like all the rest and actually do the things he was accused of. They thought I did it. I may as well have. You ever think that yourself or see someone else who had that mentality? They're going to think I did. I may as well have.
Yeah.
And so we often think the same way at times. But we find in the end of the chapter here, verse number 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, And he was there in the prison, but... Now, the buts in the Bible are very interesting. They change the direction of the conversation, okay?
Yeah.
Heard a message one time when God butts in. Okay? This is what's happening in Joseph's life. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Now this is funny to me, because whenever we see that Joseph was thrown into prison, he didn't think like we were talking about just a moment ago. Why did I even do right? Why did I live this way? I should have just went ahead and gave in to the... Joseph didn't think that way. He gets into the prison. He doesn't have a pity party. He doesn't get bitter or angry toward God. He continues living consistently the way that he always has. Still faithful, still trusting God, still doing what's right no matter what circumstances come in his life. And God blesses it. And so somehow in the prison, God makes him... Now see, it's only Joseph, okay? Only Joseph, it seems, can be the boss whenever he's a slave, and can be the prison guard when he's a prisoner. Now, you've heard the saying, when the inmates run the asylum?
Yeah, he literally was.
He literally was. It wasn't an asylum, but it was a prison, and the prisoner was running the prison. He was so faithful in what he did. He was so honest and trustworthy, and he was so well respected both by the prison keeper and the other prisoners, that the prison keeper came to work, clocked in that morning, went in the back room and went to sleep and said, "Joseph, you can take care of it." He had an easy job. He left it to Joseph to run the thing. He showed up and got the paycheck and let Joseph run it, and never had to worry about what was going on in the prison. That's pretty incredible, actually. Remember I said earlier that he was an example of how we ought to live? The prison keeper knew that Joseph, even though he was a prisoner, I'm sure he knew Joseph was falsely accused.
Yeah.
And he knew that no matter what happened, Joseph was going to do the right thing. That he was going to behave himself wisely, and all the other prisoners had enough respect for Joseph, even though Joseph had no authority there, Joseph could still rule over them. That's interesting to me. Because it takes quite a man for even the other prisoners to submit themselves to another prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, unlike Judah, Joseph behaved himself wisely wherever he went. Now going forward here into chapter number 40, I want to just kind of skim over this because it connects with chapter number 39, but I don't have time to actually read through all of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to leave it for next week, but I don't want to go through it verse by verse. So whenever he gets through into prison, the prison keeper gives him the responsibility over everything going on in the prison.
Yeah.
Doesn't pay any attention to it. And verse number 1 of chapter 40 says, "And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in the ward." This is one of those "it just so happened" things. Okay? So out of all of the prisoners and all of the prisons, Joseph's there. He's over the people in the prison, and it just so happens that two of the Pharaoh's servants get put in the prison where Joseph is, and Joseph is put in charge of them. Okay? Once again, we would think, okay, Joseph's in a bad spot. How's he ever going to become a ruler? How's he ever supposed to have all these things happen, these dreams that God gave him, how are they ever to come true with him being a prisoner? And he could have sulked, he could have cried, he could have moaned, he could have wept, he could have been bitter and all those things. But we find him here, he raises in the rings, and then when these two men, the butler and the baker, come in under his charge, it says that he serves them. The lesson I want to bring out of this portion of it is whenever you are going through a difficult time, a difficult circumstance, a trial, where's your attention? Where's your focus at? Because at this time, Joseph was still serving others. He was still caring and concerning about others. Let me just be honest with you. Whenever I'm going through a hard time, I'm not thinking about others. I'm thinking about me. I'm thinking about the situation that I'm in. I'm thinking about how awful I have it. Joseph wasn't doing that. The butler and the baker comes in and he serves them. It goes a little bit further and he sees one day that they are troubled. He's actually paying attention to them. He's paying attention to their countenance. He's paying attention to the way they're acting. And he goes to them and he says, "Hey guys, what's wrong? What are you so upset about? They're all in prison. Who cares what you're upset at? I'm in prison." Yeah. Y'all get this?
Yeah.
But Joseph goes to them while he's a prisoner as well and says, "Hey, why are you guys upset?" And they look at him and say, "We're in prison." Anyway. But they relate to him and say, "We had these dreams and we know that they mean something and we don't know what they mean." So Joseph turns to him and says, "Do not dreams and the interpretation thereof, or is that not God's business? Can God not take care of that?" He's still talking about God in prison. He's still telling others about God and what God can do while he's in prison. And they're like, "Yeah, sure, God really helped you." And so they relate their dreams to Joseph. The first one says, "There was these three clusters of grapes, and I squeezed them out and put them in the king's cup and delivered the cup into the king's hands." And Joseph says, "Oh, that's easy. In 3 days, you're going to go back to your job serving the king his cup." And so the baker says, "Hey, his dream had a good interpretation. Let me tell you about my dream." And he said, "I had three white baskets. And these three white baskets were full of all different breads and baked meats and everything. And as I had these up on my head, birds flew down and ate all the bread." And Joseph says, "Oh, this isn't good. I hate to tell you this, but in 3 days, you're going to die. Pharaoh's going to kill you." And so whenever he interprets the butler's dream and says, "You're going to be serving Pharaoh once again," this is Joseph's ticket out. Yeah. Joseph looks at this and he tells him in verse number 14, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have nothing that they should put me into this dungeon." So he tells the butler, "You're going to be in the Pharaoh's presence, and I've told you about this dream, I told you what was going to happen, and whenever your dream comes true, tell Pharaoh about me so I get out of prison." So then he tells the butler his dream, and obviously the butler's not going to be able to help him. He's dead. Okay?
Yeah.
Or the baker, I mean. The baker's dead. The butler's going to live. And so the baker's dead. And it says in verse 20, "It came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them." So Joseph, things are finally looking up for him. He's met an important guy that can put in a good word for him. Surely this is his way out. Things are going to go good for him. He's now about 28 years old. He's been in prison for a couple years, long enough to work up through the ranks. And although he's got the best place in the prison, I mean, is there really such a thing as a good place in jail?
No.
And so he's looking at this and he says, "Surely I'm going to be delivered out of here now. Maybe God's finally made a way for me to be delivered. Any day now. Any day now they're going to come to me and say, the butler told the Pharaoh about you. Pharaoh knows that you're innocent. He's come and asked the prison guards about you. They've testified on your behalf. Come out, Joseph. You've got your freedom." And days go by, and weeks go by, and months go by, and years go by. And he gives up. And about that time, we would fall into despair, discouragement, depression, over and over and over again, right? No good's going to become of this. This was finally my one chance to get out of here, and it didn't work. And so in verse number 23, it says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." Poor Joseph. Time after time after time, Joseph just gets the short end of the stick, doesn't he? We feel sorry for Joseph. Nothing's working out for Joseph. Just when he gets a break, he just falls back to the bottom again. How in the world can any of this be the hand of God? Joseph has done good all along. Even whenever he was a prisoner, he was looking out for the good of the other inmates. He was comforting them. He was cheering them up. He was a good guy even in jail. How could he be forgot about? Now, next week, we're going to be looking at how he finally gets out of jail. But we already know the story. I think most of us are fairly familiar with this, right? I just want to bring out some of these truths as we go along, make you think about it a little bit. But next week, Pharaoh has a dream. And as Pharaoh has this dream and he is so troubled because no one can tell him about the dream, finally the butler remembers him. He says, "I remember I was in jail a couple years ago and there was this guy. If he's still alive and if he's still there, he could probably tell you your dream." And so finally, after 2 years, they come and get Joseph out. He's now 30 years old. It's been 12 years. 12 years since he was taken from his father's house. 12 years of uncertainty. 12 years of ups and downs. And now he stands before Pharaoh. It's a long time, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Longer than Emily's been alive. Right? It's a long time. And so 12 years, and he finally stands before Pharaoh. And at that time, he is promoted to the place of basically prime minister in Egypt. He is second in command of one of the most powerful empires in the world at that time. It's a long way from the prison, right? But here's where I want to wrap all this up. During no part of this journey could Joseph know or be assured of the outcome. Nowhere in that 12-year period could he ever imagine that he was going to be second in command to Pharaoh. He was content to be second in command to Jacob. He was content to be second in command to Potiphar. I don't think he was content to be second in command to the jailkeeper. But still, it was better than nothing. But had he been satisfied with any of those positions, had God left him at any of those other positions, he never would have made it to being the prime minister of Egypt, right? He had to go through all of these different trials and troubles to get him to that position. Likewise, had he ever gave up, had his pity party, gave up on God, got bitter against God, quit on God, at any point during that time, he would have stayed in Potiphar's house, stayed in prison, stayed in one of the other situations, right? Never would have ended up in that situation. So what we can learn from Joseph in this is that no matter what our current situation looks like, we need to remain faithful to God. We need to be living righteously, and he's going to work things out. He's working on a long-term plan. In our current situation and the way things are going right now, we can't even imagine what God's going to do 10 or 12 years down the road. The things that he'll change in our lives. I'll tell you this, 12 years ago, I wouldn't have ever thought I'd be here.
No.
None of you knew me 12 years ago besides her.
That's right.
Yeah, that's debatable. But anyway, lots of things can change in 12 years. God puts circumstances in our lives. He puts trials and troubles and tests in our lives, and he does this to grow us, to guide us, to direct us. We may question him every step of the way. We may wonder and say, where is God and what is he doing? Is he aware of my situation? Does he even care about me? And as we see through Joseph's life, he does. He is aware. He does care. You know, if Joseph would have stopped at any other step along this way, we probably wouldn't be reading about him today.
Yeah, you're right.
His life definitely wouldn't be as miraculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
We read about just another one of Jacob's sons that ended up rotting in jail in Egypt. That ended up living his life out as a slave in Egypt. May not have been reading about that, because then Jacob and all of his sons would have died of starvation because no one was there in Egypt to deliver them. You see how God had a plan whenever no one realized what was going on?
Yeah.
Sometimes I imagine it's like being a big chess match. And God's moving it around one piece at a time, and we have no idea how he's working all this together.
Mm-hmm.
But he is.
Right.
And he knows exactly what he's doing here.
Yeah.
And he's putting us in different places. And so we need to make sure and do right, trust God, be faithful to him, keep our integrity no matter what comes, because God can take care of it, even whenever he doesn't seem like he's anywhere around.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring up just a few examples other than Joseph that we can look at, and then I'll close. We've got one that I heard of here recently, or I knew of, but I was refreshed from the story, is that of Corrie Ten Boom. I know my girls have books about her, read about her. She's actually one that was part of the Holocaust in World War II. She was in a concentration camp, and in that concentration camp, she was a Christian. She was faithful. She had tried to minister to the Jews and tried to help them out. She may have been a Jew herself. I don't know. I think she was. But anyway, during that time, she actually held Bible studies within the concentration camp. She was a source of light and encouragement to the other Jews, or not the other Jews, to the other prisoners. She led many people to the Lord in Nazi concentration camps. And she survived the concentration camps. She got out, and she actually lived to an old age. And God gave her a great ministry after she got out, and she got to see tens of thousands of people affected because of her testimony and because of the work that she did.
Right.
Going through some of the most horrific things that a person could through concentration camps, but yet she remained faithful to God through that and allowed God to work, and God did great things through her.
Mm-hmm.
That's a more modern story of God working through someone's bad situations. You can see also from Jim Elliot, he was a missionary to the Aka Indians, I believe is how you pronounce it, in Central or South America. And he was at the mission field for a very short amount of time. They were very hostile tribal people. Everyone said, don't go down there, don't even try. But God had burdened him and a few other men to go down to them. He was there for a short amount of time, and he was actually killed by the ones he went to reach. Everybody said, what a waste. How foolish he was to go. Surely him dying couldn't bring out anything good. Entire tribe ended up getting saved as a result of him giving his life to reach them. To this day, they're still, this is close to 100 years later, 60 years later anyway, 60 years later, and still his testimony lives on. Still, those Indians are Christians and passing on generation to generation because he was willing to go and give his life. So Jim Elliot's another one you can look up. David Livingstone spent his entire life in Africa trying to reach the people of Africa. And during his lifetime, he had one person make a profession of faith the whole time. And that guy didn't even remain faithful. One guy. Talk about depressing. Spent an entire life, he had one convert, and that guy didn't even amount to anything. And he died thinking that his life was for nothing. But much of what's been done in Africa, he was the one that laid the foundation. He was a front runner for that, for getting Christianity into Africa. He mapped it out. He documented. He played a big role in even abolishing slavery and the slave trade in Africa and fought hard against it. And much of what he did back then still has its effects today. And so there's a few of them. But the last one that I want to look at is the Apostle Paul. Look at all the things that Apostle Paul went through. We're fairly familiar with his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stoning, shipwreck. They tried to mob him and kill him. He was snake bit. I think he was shipwrecked three or four different times. I mean, he had many different things that went on in his life. And one passage I want to read is in Philippians chapter number 1 to get an idea of how God works through bad situations. Philippians chapter 1. By the way, Philippians is a book of encouragement that was written from prison. I can relate that a little bit to Joseph, right? He was sitting in prison, concerned about the Christians at Philippi, and he wrote a letter to encourage the Philippian Christians while he was in jail. One of the most encouraging books of the Bible is Philippians, written from jail. Okay? Verse number 12 of Philippians chapter 1. But I would that ye should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, so that my bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace and in all other places. So the Philippians were like, Paul's in jail. Poor Paul. We love Paul. Why is he in jail? How could God let this happen? Paul writes a letter and says, I want you to know that God has a purpose behind this, and that all the things that happened to me have fell out to the furtherance of the gospel. And he says specifically that the gospel has been manifest in all the palace and in all other places. So Paul's saying, hey, God's using this. God's doing something with my suffering and bringing good about out of it. Going back to Joseph, Joseph tells his brothers later on, you meant these things unto me for evil, and God meant them for good.
Right.
And back to Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. We can see as Christians, we can trust God. We can remain faithful, even whenever he seems to be nowhere around, even when we don't understand how any good could possibly come out of our circumstances. It can. God will still take care of us. So let that be an encouragement to you, and think about Joseph anytime that you struggle, anytime you're having difficulty trusting God. Think about Joseph and realize that God's there whether you understand it or not, whether you can see him or not. Does anyone have any questions or comments? That was a fairly simple passage tonight. Simple to read and teach, harder to actually live out. Okay, if we don't have anything else, then let's go ahead and we'll go to the Lord in prayer. We'll be dismissed for tonight. Dear Lord, we come to you tonight. Thank you for your blessings. And we do thank you for this time and your word. We thank you for the example of Joseph that we have here before us, Lord. As I stated, easy to read and a lot harder to live. But Lord, help us to keep these things in mind as we live for you and as difficulties arise in our lives, Lord, to trust you and know that you're there and trust in your plan, that you're working things together for our good, and that you're going to bring good about whatever happens in our lives, Lord, that we may just remain faithful and continue doing the right thing even whenever things are falling apart. And Lord, I do pray you bless your people here tonight, do a work in their hearts and their lives. And Lord, just thank you for each one of them, Lord. All these things we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.